Good to see everyone. A beautiful sunny day. Whereas I was talking with Dave earlier, and we were talking about how you put on coats in the morning and shorts in the afternoon. So how do you dress for the whole day, right? Kind of fun. Anyway, as this is the first Sunday of the month, we will also have communion today. And later on the 19th, we will have a congregational meeting. So be ready for that. And I'll send out some emails to some of you guys that write reports to help you guys motivate you. They get those reports brought in for us, so we have all those ready. So we're going to continue, as it is a first day of the month. I want to be able to get into this study right away, so we'll be able to get through the whole story. So if you wouldn't mind turning to Genesis chapter 42, we're going to continue the story, and kind of at the end, it's going to be kind of a cliffhanger. It leaves us right in the middle of a problem, but that's okay. That means you got to come back next week to hear the answer, right? So, of course, you can always do like I do, cheat ahead and read the Bible and see. Anyway, and I'm hoping that you are doing that often. I really appreciate, love you guys, if you're reading the text, you know, before you even come into the story, because it means so much more when you read it and then you hear somebody go through it and walk their way through it. It seems to be more rich for understanding. So if you found your way to Genesis chapter 42, if you wouldn't mind standing with me in honor of God's word, I'm just going to read the first 9 verses just to kind of get us into the text, and then we'll dive into it in a moment. Genesis chapter 42, starting in verse 1. When Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "Lest some calamity befall him." And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Now Joseph was governor over the land, and it was he who sold all the people of the land. And Joseph's brother came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. Then he said to them, "Where do you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." Thank you. You may be seated. Father, once again, we're so privileged to be able to come before you in prayer, come before you studying your word, speaking the very truth of your word, Father. We pray that the principles that you want us to apply will be those principles that we're just really strengthen our everyday lives, to be motivated to tell more people about Jesus, to be more motivated to live the life that will bring honor to you. Father, we look forward to seeing what you have for us in this very text. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. So, hopefully everyone also has a handout. The handout will kind of walk us through the outline. And maybe I'll walk through the outline first, and then we'll dive into the text. So the first 4 verses, Jacob, the father, sends his sons, only 10 of them, to buy grain because there's a big famine there, especially in Canaan at this time. And remember, we were talking about, Joseph talked about the dream that he had, or actually the Pharaoh's dream that he interpreted, that he's going to be 7 years of a lot of food and 7 years of a feast. Of famine, I should say. So they're going to be without food. This is during that time. So this is several years later that Canaan's out. Canaan is in that situation where they're living in that famine. So remember, Joseph himself, this is 20-some-odd years since he's been cast, taken as a prisoner and all that. So a lot has happened in Joseph's life, and of course in the family life, his own family, Jacob's life is going on. So there's a famine. He sends only 10 of the 11 sons down to Egypt. Verses 5 and 6, the sons of Jacob bow down before Joseph. Sounds like the beginning of the fulfillment, but it's not the complete fulfillment. And we'll talk about why that's important. It's the beginning of it. Remember, Joseph's dream when he was much younger, 16, 17 years old, and how they're going to bow down to him and all that. That's the beginning of it, but there's more that has to happen to be complete fulfillment. Then verse 7 through 17, Joseph interrogates his brothers and imprisons them, received for 3 days, and as he decides what he's going to do. 18 through 20, Joseph gives terms for their release from prison, right? So they're obviously wanting to be released, and he's kind of giving them a foretaste, but not really what he had to deal with. He had to deal with it for years and years, and they had 3 days in prison. 21 through 25, the guilty conscience of Joseph's brothers is at work, and that's a very important concept, the idea of the conscience, and we're talking about what's involved with that, not only in the brothers' lives, but how it affects even our everyday life. 25 through 28, the brothers find their money returned. Remember, they went down there to buy grain, and they came down with money, and so they got the grain and didn't know that they had also returned the money, and that actually makes them fearful. Oh no, now they're going to think we're thieves, and so there's a whole bunch going on there. 29 through 35, of course, they return to Jacob to tell him the story, what happened to them, and Jacob's always looking at them cross-eyed, not really always believing what they're saying. He always seems to distrust his own sons. And then 36 through 38 is Jacob's reaction, and so we'll talk about that. So just start in verse 1, 42:1, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" The point, you got to read both sentences separately. When they saw that there was grain in Egypt, so they heard the word Egypt, and it made the sons think, oh no, remember a long time ago, 20 some odd years ago, remember what we had done to their other brother, Joseph, how they sold him as a slave and probably was in Egypt. So he says, why do you look at one another? So you got to read the both. You got to realize part one was read, said, you know, about Egypt, mentioning Egypt, and then they go, well, why do you look perplexed? Well, they're all kind of feeling guilty. They've been keeping this secret for years and years and years, 20-some-odd years, that they know that what evil they have done, but they're just perplexed by it at this point, right? So it's not much more than a strange expression that they have on their face. All Jacob is saying is, well, go to Egypt because there's food down there, but their strange look gives him more reason to question them, to wonder why they look that way. Verse 2. And he said, indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. He's making it very plain. His thinking is very obvious. We need food, right? So go down to that place and buy for us there that we may live and not die. Again, so the whole point is obvious. They're in a point of a famine. And so again, they just had the time of the 7 years that was a big abundance, and that's good. But now we're in that time when it's no longer an abundance. And it is the dream from Pharaoh that Joseph had interpreted was it's going to be 7 years of this, of the abundance and 7 years of famine. So somewhere in the middle of this famine, we don't know exactly, within that 7 year period, Canaan is living with this, and Canaan and the family is having to deal with this famine as well. So they're running out of food. So it's pretty obvious. We just need to, he gives them the command to go down there. And they're like, we really don't want to go down there, to be honest, because they're remembering what they had done with Joseph. But we'll go on. Verse 3. So Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. So again, why is it only 10? And why? Because there's 11. There's 12 sons. Jacob thinks that Joseph is dead. He doesn't know he's alive. That's part of the secret. They don't know that he's alive. They think that he's a slave somewhere. So he's not going to send down Benjamin. He's not, because it's part of the, remember, Rachel had two sons, Joseph and Benjamin. And so they're his favorite sons. Now, having favorites in the family is never a good idea. It's obviously a very bad thing, but that was a very big thing. We saw it even in Isaac's family, and we see it in Jacob's family, where they had favorites of their children, which ends up not being a good plan. But in the end, his two, he thinks one of his son Joseph is dead, and he's not going about to send Benjamin, so you 10 go, I'm going to keep him protected, and he's going to point that out as he goes on. Verse 4. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, and he says why? For he said, lest some calamity, lest some evil, some bad thing befall him as well. So you get the idea. He's like, well, every time you guys go out to do things together, something bad happens, right? I mean, you know, he remembers 20 years ago, and the idea was, well, they came back with the coat of many colors, that they called it, and they showed it to Jacob, said, well, a wild animal got them. Well, of course, he didn't. They put the blood on there and made it look like he was killed by a wild animal. Of course, that was a lie. That's obviously very important as we go into the story, as we get into Egypt's story here. But obviously, you got to see what's going on in Jacob's mind. He doesn't trust his other sons at all. He doesn't trust them at all. So he doesn't want anything bad to happen to Benjamin. So verse 5, so the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed. So obviously they didn't disrupt by themselves. This was a famine. It was wide sweeping, right, all over the place. And so there are others that are traveling to Egypt for the same reason. So they're kind of caravanning down to Egypt to get this food. So he said, among those who journeyed. So it's not just the 10, there are others who were going down for this very purpose. They said, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. It wasn't just in Egypt when Joseph interpreted the dream. It wasn't just a regional thing. It wasn't just going to happen in Egypt. It's happening in that whole region down to the south and up into Canaan and all that went with it. So that's obviously a big deal. All this is being orchestrated, of course, by God. None of this is a surprise. None of this is taking God by surprise at all. He's orchestrating the details for a reason. He's making things happen, and that's the providence of God. Verse 6, now Joseph was governor over the land. Now we're talking about back in Egypt. We saw what happened to him in the last chapter, how he's elevated by the Pharaoh himself to be in charge of all this situation with the food, situation with the collecting all the grain ahead of time, and because there's going to be 7 years of good, and then because there's going to be 7 years of bad, they need to have all this collected ahead of time. And he basically had 20% of everything that's made goes to the governor, goes to the Egypt, to the, for, you know, the officials there, and they collect all this so that when they get to the time of famine, see, this is obviously, oh God, it's pretty obvious God's letting him know that ahead of time and putting Joseph in a position of authority for the ultimate purpose of getting all of Israel down into Egypt. And that leads us, of course, into the book of Exodus. So we're running down in the book of Genesis here to the end. So I think that's important. So they go down to verse 6 again. Now Joseph was governor of the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. Remember, Joseph was number two in the land. There was the Pharaoh, and there was Joseph, number two. Now, Pharaoh was doing his thing and other issues he was dealing with, but everything to do with the collection of the grain and the distribution of the grain was completely in Joseph's control, completely was given to him by Pharaoh himself. So it was he who sold to all the people of the land. It said, and Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. Now, the first thing that comes to my mind, of course, is, well, that sounds exactly like what happened that his dream. Remember Joseph's dream, and he said that you're going to be bowing down before me. Well, that is the beginning of it. But remember, it wasn't just the brothers. It's actually going to be his parents. It's going to be Jacob himself is going to end up being involved and actually bowing down before him. So there's going to be more that needs to happen for this to be a complete fulfillment. But it certainly sounds a lot like Joseph's dream in chapter 37 when they talked about them bowing down to him. Remember, and that's part of what brought this whole thing to a head in itself. He did it in such a way that it made him look very proud. All you guys that are older than me and all that, well, guess what? You're all going to bow down to me, kind of an attitude. And so, as you see, God did a work in Joseph. His life changes when he's in prison. He becomes a different person. And so, obviously, I just want to contrast it. This issue with the bowing down and the dream and all that made them, the other brothers, so frustrated that they wanted to sell him off. And that's part of what led to it. So verse 7 through 17 is a big part of it. So the interrogation part with the brothers. So Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them. So Joseph knows who they are. Remember, he's now, it looks like an Egyptian. Now he's probably clean shaven. He's got no beard. They probably all got a beard and they look like they did before. He's completely looks very different clothing and all that. And he's also much older. He was 17 when he went into prison. Now he's in his, like 20 years later. So he's much older than he was. So 38, 39. So he's much older time-wise. So he's not going to look the same. And so he, people do change. He's dressed differently. He's much older, and they have no idea who he is. But he certainly recognizes them. They're wearing the same old kind of garb, like nomads would wear. The kind of cape they would wear. They would move around. The people that were always on the move. He recognized them. Same face. They're also older, but he certainly recognizes them. He said, but he acted, Joseph, verse 7 again, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. So, kind of don't blame him, but he's in charge. They put him in this bad position, but yet somehow God turned this bad situation into, oh my goodness, he's second in command in all of Egypt. That's an amazing thing that God was able to do that. But he did. He said, but he recognized him and he acted like a stranger. He's like, okay, I don't trust you guys, because the last time I saw you, I was crying, guys, what are you doing? As he's running off to become a prisoner, as they were hauling him away, you can see him dragging him off. And he's like, what are you guys, come on, this is not funny, And so he's thinking, these guys are pretty bad. I don't trust them. Jacob doesn't trust the brothers, and Joseph doesn't trust. Not a lot of trust in that family, is there? You can see, it's pretty obvious it's very bad. So he spoke roughly to them, meaning basically, what do you want? Why are you here? Well, he knows why they're here. But Joseph is going to ask some questions to try to find out where their heart is at. That's really the issue, that Joseph is trying to find out. A lot of years have passed. Are you any different now than you were when you sold me into slavery? He wants to find out. They don't know who he is, but he's going to find that out. Where do you come from? Now, it's obvious that Joseph already knows the answer. He was part of them at one time. But he's going to start small and build, ask some questions. They're going to get to try to be more, to find out where they're coming from. And not just physically, but where their thinking is at. Where do you come from? And he said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. So he made their response very simple. From the land of Canaan, we came down here to the south, and now we're buying food. And that's a whole purpose. Sounds good on the surface here. But they're being honest. This is what they're there for. And I guess in some sense, if you think about it from the brother's standpoint, what's going on in their mind? They're in Egypt. There's no way they'll ever see Joseph while they're down here. He's probably a slave somewhere, growing crops or doing some kind of manual labor somewhere. We'll never see him. But this being down there was not something they wanted to do. Just the thought of what they had done to Joseph is making him feel guilty. But that builds even more. First thing, so Joseph recognized his brother, but they did not recognize him. He reemphasizes that. He knows who they are, and he's in charge, and they don't know who he is, and they're fearful of him because he's in charge, and they got to ask him for something. They got to ask him for food, is what he's asking for. Verse 9, then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them. Okay, so he's going back 20-some-odd years, right? Then that was the dream where they bowed down to him. They're like, I can't believe this, because they're already doing this. It's like, oh, I'm actually seeing a form of what I had dreamed about a long time ago is taking place. Again, this is not the complete fulfillment of it. There's more to it, but it's the beginning of it. So Joseph remembered the dream which he had dreamed about them and said to them, now watch this. Now he goes and does a switcheroo on them. He remembers a dream. They don't know what's in his mind. So the first thing he says to them, you are spies. So this is part of the roughness that he said. He spoke rough to them. Like, I don't trust you guys. You're up to something. There's something. You're doing something wrong. I know you're here to bring mischief into our land. He has no trust for them. He doesn't really have any reason to have trust. But again, he's trying to find out, have they changed over the years, 20-some-odd years since he's seen them. Says, you are spies, you have come to seek out and to see the nakedness of the land. A kind of strange phrase, but he's referring to the idea that they came in in places where there were not big forts. They came in. In fact, the rabbis had their own little tradition. What they said is they came in and they different places. They came in this gate and this one. The couple of them came in here. And a couple came in here, and then they all cooperated back together. And so the idea is they came in different places where there's not a lot of fortresses and a lot of a lot of guards. You kind of snuck in to nakedness where it's vulnerable idea. So the picture that Jacob is seeing, or Joseph is seeing, about the brothers is the idea that they came in separately and then they come together acting like they're all one. Well, that's just a tradition that we don't know how they came in. But it's obvious Joseph is trying to learn from them what's going on in their life without them knowing. It says, "You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land." So the idea that they're coming in a way that he thinks he's accusing them of something. If you're accused of being a spy, and you know, to be considered a spy, the jury, a lot of times for them is, "Well, I just said you're a spy. You deserve death. That's it. There's no more jury. There's no court case coming before." Sometimes there is. But when it comes to that, that is a death sentence. He just said, "You guys are spies, and I'm going to send you to prison because you're spies." Get the scariness of it. And he said in verse 10, "No, my Lord, but your servants have come to buy food." We're only here to buy food. We're really not spies. And then verse 11, he builds on it. "We were all one man's sons." Right? He's trying to make it one man's son. If we're spies, we're one man, we're all part of the same family. Usually, one whole family doesn't go into the world of being a spy, because the chance is losing everybody, the whole family. You get the idea that we're all part of one family. That we would not, spies wouldn't do that. We're all brothers of one another, and a whole bunch of one family wouldn't come in together to become spies. That's not natural, because if something happens, we lose the whole family. That's what they're saying there, verse 11. "We are all one man's son," they're all sons of Jacob. Different mothers, yes, but Jacob is the father. "We are honest men." Won't you want to just stop right there? "We are honest men." Wait a minute, what do you mean you're honest men? Well, Joseph, of all people, here, "we're honest men," is like, yeah, right. I mean, that's the word. He's not believing that because of what they have done to him. But he's giving them a little sense of possible, we'll find out, we're here. I want to hear what you got to say. But he's in charge, right? Right? He said, "No, my Lord, we're here to buy food. We are all one man's son. We are honest. Your servants are not spies." Again, to be considered a spy, that is a death sentence. So that's a pretty important thing. And the irony of that, of Joseph actually hearing them saying, "We're honest men," is kind of like, yeah, you got the word thief on here, and you're talking to him, right? Anyway, verse 12. "But he said to them, 'No, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land.'" Again, he's emphasizing that they came in with the intent of bringing some kind of problem to the land of Egypt. "And when I'm going to be here to stop this, like, because I can tell that you're going to do bad things." And they're like, no, that's really not true. We're just here to buy food. And, you get the idea. They have their intention, and he's still trying to stir them up, stir their conscience a little bit. 13, "And they said to him, 'Your servants are 12 brothers.'" So they're trying to be really honest, and because they're standing before him, they don't want to make up any story. But in the middle of making sure they tell the truth, they have to lie. Okay, look at verse 13. "And they said, 'Your servants are 12 brothers. The sons of one man is in the land of Canaan.'" Well, yeah, Benjamin's still back there. "And in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." Who's that? That's the person you're talking to. That's me. That's Joseph. But they don't know that. "And one is no more," meaning they think he's dead. That's the implication. He's no more because he died. They're not going to say, "Well, we sold him as a slave, and he may be alive here in Egypt." Well, that's really the truth. They didn't tell that part. They just said, "But he's no more," as if he had passed. And they're actually speaking to the one they think has actually already passed, right? "But Joseph said to them, 'It is as I spoke to you, saying, you are spies.'" Oh, no. That's not good, because they're headed in a bad direction. They're like, "No, we come here to buy food, and we're being accused of being the spies, and we're not intending to be spies at all." But doesn't matter. They're not in charge, right? 15, "In this manner, you shall be tested." Well, That's a good way, good word there. The tested, because that is what Joseph is doing. He's testing them to find out where their hearts are at. Where's their mindset? What are they thinking? Have they changed in over 20 years or not? So in this manner, you shall be tested by the life of Pharaoh. And he says that. He's going to repeat that phrase. By the life of Pharaoh, meaning with the highest authority of this land, I do this upon you. You shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes to me. Well, you know, so Joseph and Benjamin are real full brothers, right? Both from Rachel. So they have that situation, that connection, and they're like, and there are only 10 of the brothers there. So I want to see him. And I mean, I'm sure Joseph really wanted to see him. He sees now all the other brothers. He wants to see them too, but he's not going to let them know who he is quite yet. Right? That, you know, that's going to have to come sometime later. But he does give them a test to send the youngest one here. As you know, Jacob's not good with that idea at all whatsoever. 16, send one of you, and let him bring your brother, and you shall keep in prison. You shall be kept in prison. So I'm going to put you guys in prison. I'm going to let you send one person down to go get Benjamin and bring him to me. That's a very obvious word, right? That your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you. Now, it's kind of an interesting test. I mean, they could just go find somebody. If they were lying, they can go bring somebody else up there, and some younger person, say that you're our brother. They could have been. They could make this up. But this is still. But this is the test he gave to them, even though it's not foolproof. Again, he's getting them to think about what's going on in their own situation. Then he said, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh. Again, he says that again. You shall. You are surely spies. If you can't bring your younger brother up or down here to Egypt, where they're coming from Canaan, down south to Egypt. If you can't bring your youngest brother, which he knows is Benjamin by name, if you can't bring him, then by all means, you guys are spies and you are going to die. And that's the obvious implication. Verse 17, so he put them all together in prison for 3 days. So he's thinking, to me, I think Joseph is still trying to figure out what he's going to do, the full plan. He told him what he's going to do initially. I still want to see the younger brother. I want you to bring him here. But in the meanwhile, he gives him a little taste of what it's like to be in prison. So he gives him 3 days. They don't have any idea how long they're going to be there. He just takes him 3 days to figure out what he's going to do. Verse 20 or verse 18, he starts out where he's going to now talk about the terms of his release. Then Joseph said to them in the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. Now that's an interesting little phrase that he added in there. I'm sure most of the people that he talks to, they're coming for food and for grain. He doesn't say, probably doesn't say, I fear God. But he does say that to them. And it's a generic term for God. It's just a word for Adonai. It's the idea of the Lord himself, not the Yahweh, which would be the covenant name. But I fear God. It kind of give them encouragement, like I'm a moral man. He's saying, I'm a moral man before you guys, right before his brothers. Joseph said to them on the third day, do this and live, for I fear God. That's important. 19, if you're honest men, you know, okay, he knows them, haven't been, they certainly weren't in the past, but if you're honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison house. So he's going to confine one of them, instead of all of them, going to keep one of them, just one. But you go and carry grain for the famine and for your houses. In other words, so you guys, you came here with the intention of buying grain and for the food for your house. Well, okay, I see that's important. I'll let most of you go, but I'm going to keep one of you hostage until you bring the brother. That's obviously what they want. That's what he says in verse 20. And bring your youngest brother to me, so your words will be verified, and you shall not die. And he did so. So they're like, okay, if that's what we need to do. So, you know, usually it would be the oldest of the group. They would typically, the most representative would have been Reuben, right? So he would have been the oldest. So he would have been the guy that should have been the one held in prison, but he picks somebody else. Joseph does. Verse 21, and they said to one another, now listen, he knows Hebrew, right? This is Joseph, that's what he grew up with. He also knows Egyptian, and so he's speaking Egyptian through an interpreter, so they never really hear his voice, right? He talks to them, and they hear the interpreter. They don't really hear him directly speaking to them, so everything's going through an interpreter. And so he hears them talking to one another about this situation. Okay, now we're going to, okay, we got to go back, we got to bring the grain back to Father, to Jacob, and we got to tell him that we need to bring the youngest, and he's not going to like that idea. He doesn't trust us anyway. You can see they're going to have a real struggle. So they're going to be talking among themselves, and he's like this. He's eavesdriving, listening to what they're saying. They don't think that he can hear him and understand him because he's been speaking through an interpreter. And he said to one another, "You are truly guilty concerning our brother." This is what they're saying to one another. You did it. That was your idea. And they're all starting to blame one another, right? "For we saw the anguish of his soul as he pleaded with us." So he's talking about when they were, as Joseph was being drawn away, carried away as a slave, having already been sold, and they could receive the money, and he's being carried away. He, you know, "Brothers, what are you doing? What are you," and he's calling all their names out, and all Simeon and Rachel, I mean, you know, all the different brothers, right? He goes through the names, and none of them wants to come to rescue him. I think that's interesting. "So, for we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us." So, now, think about it with Joseph. He's listening to them say that about him, and they don't, again, they don't know that he understands what they're saying. "For we would not hear." We just ignored it. We let it, they're not very honest. They let it go on. It's obviously a big deal. They let the evil continue. "Therefore, this distress has come upon us." So it's pretty obvious that they're feeling the weight of it. There's like their conscience. They're feeling guilty. Should they be feeling guilty? Of course they should be feeling guilty. But they've been keeping this lie about their brother for years. As far as they're concerned, he may still be alive somewhere in Egypt. That's why they had perplexed face there at the beginning there. But as a slave is what they're thinking, and that's pretty important. You know, one thing that's interesting, the conscience does a lot of things for us when we all have a built-in conscience, a built-in moral compass. It's not very reliable. You can sear your conscience, the Word of God talks about it, where you get to the point where you don't hear, nothing bothers you anymore. Anything you say and do that at one time would have been something that would have pricked your conscience and told you that's bad, that's evil. Conscience never really tells you when you do good, it only tells you when you do bad. That's the whole point of the conscience. But see, the thing about the idea of the conscience, you know, here in the U.S., they created what's called the Federal Conscience Fund. Right back in 1811, the Federal Conscience Fund, and it was an interesting letter somebody wrote in. It says something like this. One man wrote a letter to the IRS and said, "I cheated on my taxes and I can't sleep at night. So here's a check for $100. And if I still can't sleep, I'll send you the rest of what I owe." You get the idea, right? But you see, all the conscience is going to do is tell you that that $100 probably didn't help him. He probably ended up not sleeping. I know I owed him $2,000 or $1,000 or whatever. I guess I better send it all. But the conscience is very real, and they were really feeling their conscience at this point. The brothers were really getting the idea that, man, we've done really bad. And yes, Joseph is hearing them say that, and that's a good thing. 22. "And Reuben answered them, saying, did I not," they're still talking to each other, the brothers are, "did I not speak to you, saying, do not sin against the boy?" So this is the first time that Joseph is here. Oh, that was quite a debate. And actually, Reuben was trying to come to my rescue. Remember, Reuben is the one that said, well, don't have him killed. That's what they all want to do, was kill him. And he's the one that came up, well, why don't we sell him instead, you know, but not kill him. So do not sin against the boy, is what Reuben said. And you would not listen, right? Don't sin against the boy. Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. So, again, for their standpoint, he may be dead. And if Joseph is dead, then it's really their fault, all their faults. And their blood, his blood, is required upon them, their blood and all that goes with it. It's a pretty obvious point there. 23. But they did not know that Joseph understood them. Oh, I have no idea that they all heard it and all this, the conversation, and Reuben was trying to protect them and not being killed. Remember, Reuben wanted to put him in prison for a little bit and his sister, and his dry sister, and then he's going to come back later on. Remember, he's going to get him out and let him go home. Just kind of kind of punish him for a little bit, but not really do anything drastically harmful. Again, but Joseph, but they did not know that Joseph understood him, and he spoke to them through an interpreter. That's kind of the point. We didn't know about the interpreter, but he spoke everything through the interpreter, and that makes it a lot easier for them not to recognize his voice. He's not booming a voice towards them. He's speaking to the interpreter, and the interpreter speaks back as they hear them speaking. So from their standpoint, Joseph knows nothing of what they were just squabbling about with one another. This is all in front of him, in front of the governor as he is. And he turned himself away from them and wept. So, you know, they got some kind of covering. He obviously was emotional over it. I mean, this is something, they're talking about him. And talking about him like in the third person. And talking about him as if, you know, his blood is required upon us. As if they think that he's dead. They're like, no, that's the way it is. They don't think of him as very honest. But he can't believe this is his brother. They have to come to him. And he's in a good position to do whatever he wants to do. This is a great opportunity to bring retribution. You know, get the attitude, I don't get even, I get ahead. Well, that's not Joseph at all. That's good because he had a heart. He learned a lot in the 20 some odd years while he was in prison with Potiphar and in prison itself before he got into this position. So the Lord has changed his heart. He's become a lot more humble of a man. And even though he's in charge of this and he can just say, you're spies, you're going to be killed, and let it end at that, he gave them the choice, the chance, I should say, because that's what he's trying to learn more about where they're coming from. Again, 24 again, and he turned himself again away to them and he wept, and then he returned to them again and talked with them through the interpreter. And he took Simeon from them and bound him with his, I'm sure he probably said that one. He just pointed to him. And because he just wanted to point to someone, that's the one that's going to go to the prison. The rest of you nine, go home, bring your grain, but make sure you come back with the youngest one. He knows that, of course, he knows that's Benjamin, his full brother. Then verse 25, then Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, which is what they came for. So obviously he got the sack, they gave him the money, he's going to let them go. Filled it with grain to store every man's money in his sack. Oh, wait a minute. So they're going to get all the grain that they asked for, plus they're going to be putting their money back in the sacks. I'm sure he didn't do that to too many people along the way as they were coming for grain, but he did it for his own brothers. Of course, that's going to cause quite a stir. They put every man's money back in his sack to give them provision for the journey. And he did, and they did exactly what they were commanded to do. He gave them the grain and gave their money back to them. That's going to actually bring a lot of scariness to the situation. 26. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. All they know is we got the grain. We got to somehow go back to Jacob, our father, and tell him we need to be able to come back with Benjamin or we're never going to see Simeon again. Or he's going to end up dying, right? 27. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, okay, they're moving on, they're already out, they're leaving, he saw his money, and it was there. Oh, no. Oh, it's going to look like I stole this, right? So in the mouth of the sack, he opened it up, and whoa, like they put the grain in there, and they shoved the money on top, right, is the picture of what they got there. It's actually, verse 27, is actually uses two different words for sack. We see the word sack used. But one of them opened his sack to give his money to feed the donkey. And then at the end there, and there it was in the mouth of his sack. It's not the same word, same sentence, same verse, but it's actually two different verses of two different words for sack. One seems to be for the grain. One is where they typically put their money, most likely is what it's referring to. So in the money sack, for some reason, the money was there. 28. So he said to his brothers, my money has been restored. So they're going, wait a minute, somehow my money that we all came with a different amount, we all had money, and it's been restored to me. What's up with that? And there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them when they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? Now, this is the very first time in the book of Genesis you ever see any of those brothers ever mention God. Right here. The first time, their conscience is pricked. They're overwhelmed. They can't believe what's happening. First of all, they're already being accused of being a spy. They're on one word away from you're guilty, you're going to be killed. They're so close to that. Now they're a thief on top. That's how they're seeing it. They're perceiving, oh my goodness, I can't believe it. We got the grain, but we got the money. Now what are we going to do? They're going to think that we stole it. Somehow we did some kind of trickery. So I like that at the end. What is this that God has done to us? And it is God that is doing a work on their conscience, through their conscience, to get to their attention. Verse 29, so they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan, told him all that had happened to them, right? All this, the whole story, the whole event, and you know how we were accused of being a spy, and now they got Simeon, and now we got to bring Benjamin, and he's like, I'm not having any of this. I can see Jacob's not having that. So the man, verse 30, so the man who is Lord of the land spoke roughly to us, they're trying to recant the story, and took us for spies of the country, right? So, oh no, we're going to be in trouble, which you all know is a death sentence. But we said to him, we are honest men and not spies. That is what they said. Whether it's true or not is another issue, right? They said that they're honest men, we're not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father, one who is no more. Again, they're referring to Joseph as the one who is no more, probably. They're thinking, because that's the story they definitely told Jacob, he's dead. They're not going to say he might be alive in Egypt as a slave. They're not going to tell him that. And the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. So they gave him the short on it. Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, by this I will know that you are honest men. So they're letting him know. They're giving a test. They let us free, but we're being tested. Leave one of your brothers here for me, with me. Take food for the famine of your households and be gone. So they took Simeon. He picked the one. He's going to stay. That's the one. And so they're just recanting the story. And bring your youngest brother to me. Now, I imagine at that point, Jacob's going, whoa, what? Bring the youngest brother. That's the last thing he wants to do. So I shall know that you are not spies, but you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, that you may trade in the land. That trade in the land is the idea that you may more freely come and go, and there's opportunity for the future that you may be able to come back. That because I know you're honest, so if you come back later, I'll continue to give you the feed that you need, is the implication there. Then in 35, then it happened as they emptied their sacks that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. Oh no, we got the grain and the money. Some people go, oh yeah, that worked out really good, but that's not an honest person. But their conscience is working on them, so they're seeing this as not a good thing, right? Each man's money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. It wasn't just them. I think the father is getting, oh no, this is not good. Did you guys steal this grain? Did you go down there with the money? I can imagine Jacob, he doesn't say that here, but I'm imagining Jacob's like, you guys, there's no way they would give you the grain and with the, you know, not taking any of the money. It's pretty obvious. And 36, then Jacob, his father, said to them, you have bereaved me, right? Joseph is no more. You brought up Joseph again. Obviously, Joseph was a subject that they never mentioned. They never brought it up because it made Jacob so upset. You know, you have bereaved me by even mentioning that the one brother is no more. Just saying that again hurts his heart. That's how much he loved Joseph, right? Simeon is no more. Is one is no more, right? Simeon is no more. So they're thinking, okay, from their story, I don't believe your story. We already know Joseph is dead. And now you're telling me Simeon is dead. That's what I'm hearing. That's what Jacob is hearing in his story. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin? So that's pretty obvious. You're telling me now this third one is going to die, is his implication. All these things are against me. There's not a lot of, sound like strong faith going on in Jacob's life. It's pretty obvious, I think. That's pretty clear. He's not really trusting the Lord. He's looking at circumstances and all that goes with it. 37, then Reuben spoke to his father. Now, this is so lame, but he's just trying to console his father. It's not going to work. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, kill my two sons if I do not bring them back. You know, if I don't bring Simeon back, kill my two sons. Put them in your hands, and I will bring them back to you. Now, just try to think of the logic there. So how is killing my now grandsons going to make it any better than I lost my other sons? I mean, it was a really poor attempt of what Reuben was trying to do. He's trying to help him, but it was kind of like, I'm trying to encourage him, but it was the wrong words to say, obviously. It wasn't something that's going to help him. But he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead. that's what he understands. Jacob believes that Joseph is dead, right? For he is left alone. Simeon's down there alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair, the sorrow to the great mother. I'm already depressed. I'm already feeling down. I'm near the end of my life as it is, as it's going. And you're just trying to bring more depression. You want to see more of my sons killed. That's pretty obvious what they're dealing with there. So in the end, so it leaves you with, okay, I'm not about to let you take Benjamin and take him down to Egypt. Not going to happen. So that's like a guaranteed death sentence for Simeon, right? And so, but they're still like, but we're going to need grain not only now, but in the future. So we got to get this situation resolved. We got to somehow convince Jacob, our father, who has no intention of letting Benjamin go, to let Benjamin go. So obviously, it's clear that there's a lot of mistrust in this family. And I hope in our own families, we have a lot more trust in our family and not a mistrust, because mistrust is a difficult situation. But it's pretty obvious that the conscience is working on them. They're all feeling guilty, and that's a good thing, because they were guilty and very guilty. This story obviously builds and builds as it goes on, but it's going to leave us with that cliffhanger of, no, I'm not about to let Benjamin go down there. So